hello, great people. Welcome to the Concurrency Podcast. We, your host, I'm Aman Kibue.
And I'm Steve Kibika. Yeah. So today we have Mambo Brand. Mambo Brand is an Android engineer. I'm going to let him introduce himself, but just a highlight of what I know of him. He's an Android engineer. Does a lot of technical writing, I assume you do. And he's also...
He looks like a guy who can write technical writings.
Yeah, because he also is part, a major part of the Kotlin Kenya community. And yeah, so welcome, Brian.
Thank you so much, Steve. And Harman, for having me on the Concurrency Podcast. It has been a long time coming.
Yeah, and I'm so happy.
Wait, what am I supposed to say so that I do not say too much? Give me a highlight.
You can say anything. This episode was supposed to be recorded on the 3rd of December 2022. It is being recorded on the 20th of January 2023. Absolutely the fault of the management of the Concurrency Podcast. But then, yeah, finally, you're here.
Yep, the management has been doing awesome work while we are away. Anyways, what's up, guys? My name is, my full name is, by the way, actually, Brian Odhiambo. But people call me Mambo, and it stuck, so it became Mambo Brian. I'm currently a mobile developer at a company called NLS Tech Solutions. It offers software development, but mostly right now, it's mostly offering software development stuff, but for finance companies. Yeah.
Yeah, fintech. So it is a Kenyan-based company?
It is a Kenyan-based company.
Interesting.
So today we are here to talk about embracing declarative UIs with Kotlin. Harman does not work on the front end, so declarative UIs, I know he's trying to associate now how declarative programming and declarative UIs. Before we go on, I primarily work on the web and I have very limited experience with mobile. I'm assuming Harman too. So the only time I wrote code for an Android application was in 2019 for like a month for a project, and then that was it. But anyway, I did not exactly enjoy it.
You sound like our intern right now.
No, I mean, Java is very verbose. And I for someone who writes JavaScript, and I can write Ruby, and comparing something like Java to Ruby, you'll realize Java is very verbose. You are writing too much. Java people just write too much. Yeah.
True.
So, yeah. Before we talk about declarative UIs, I think it is important we discuss declarative programming versus imperative programming. So this is my two cents on declarative and imperative programming. Declarative focuses on the what, and imperative focuses on the how. So there's this great analogy I was reading on, and take an example of ordering a table at a restaurant. And so imperative programming would be, I see that table, I'm going to walk this way and then turn there, and then I'm going to sit at that table next to the window. While declarative programming is just getting into the restaurant and saying, I need a table of two. You don't really care how you're going to get the table. You just care about what you want. And that is the what, not the how. So, yeah. So that is declarative versus. Yeah.
Wow. And he even used the restaurant.
And try and put in food there so that, you know.
So both are just Kibweka.
Yes.
So does that even apply now to the UIs? Like, or is it yeah. a design okay. pattern or something?
I'm not sure I would define it as a design pattern. I'm not really sure of that. But then what I would say, it is a way of abstracting software, whereas declarative focuses on the mental model of the developer, imperative focuses on the operational model of the machine. So an example would be, let me use a JavaScript example. So in JavaScript, and in the languages that you use, there are for loops, mm-hmm. right? And so say you need to take an array of integers and get an array of these integers multiplied by 2. So the way you do it in JavaScript, there's a verbose where you write a for loop, loop through the array, and on each item, multiply them by 2, right? But you can abstract all that functionality and just do array.map, where you just map through the array and multiply by 2. So when you use the .map function, that is declarative. But then when you do the for loop, that is imperative. Because when you're doing the for loop, you're focusing on the operational model. You can actually trace the steps of the execution. But then when you're doing the .map, you really don't care how it is doing it. You just care that it is doing what you want. And so that is it. It is just sort of a way of abstracting the software in a way that in the mental model of the developer. Okay.
Like now I understand what you mean by focusing on the what instead of the how. It's like like having a separate model of how the UI looks and then just putting it there. And then now going back and thinking like, okay, so how is the data looking so that I can model that to look like the data? And while in declarative, you just model your UI directly is how the data is coming. That's it.
Yeah.
Yes and no. so declarative UIs in the web have existed for a while now. And I mean, when there was this so much hype on Jetpack Compose, I remember seeing someone on Twitter just say, "I don't understand why the mobile people are so excited. We've been doing this on the web for ages." And so,
oh my goodness, like that person, HTML, that person,
you know that person. So something like HTML is a declarative way of doing something, because what you're saying is, I need a paragraph. I don't care how the web browser does it. I just know I need a paragraph. And so you just put the paragraph tag. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So that is basically a sort of a declarative way of doing things. Because an imperative one would be, I need text to show in the form of a paragraph and having to define all that in a way that the machine actually understands. So yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I feel like we need to continue talking about declarative and imperatives. But then this is the thing: most of the things that are declarative have an underlying imperative implementation. You get the same way the example I just gave with a for loop in JavaScript. The for loop, the .map function, sort of abstracts the for loop. Most declarative ways of doing things have an imperative functionality beneath. So, yeah.
Yep. And also, I think the abstraction leads to developers writing like very little code.
Very little. Yeah.
Because you're not doing everything.
Yeah. Because true. That is the intention. That is the intention. So, yeah. We are not here to absolutely, because I can make this about the web and declarativeness in the web and how we've been doing it before mobile, but we are here to talk about declarative UIs with Kotlin. So yeah.
Brian,
where do we start?
I liked how you said Java is very verbose in that you write a lot of things necessarily that maybe you're not going to use, or you don't want to, or you don't need, but you still have to write them, right? And uh-huh. it becomes like a barrier to entry in Android for so many people because of how it was structured, right? And even you, Steve,
like me.
You felt like, no, if it is Java, no, maybe I'm not doing this. Yeah. Makes sense. I started off with Java. I can't say I loved it, but Samuel Owino loves Java. I don't know how he does it. He just loves it. I personally do not fancy it at all.
Oh, yeah, the life planner guy.
Yes, 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 Sam. Sam is a very awesome guy anyways. So my joy of mobile development started when I started moving to Kotlin. So there were things that I was doing in Java that was like, this is so much time, a lot of wasting space. So we moved to Kotlin, and Kotlin was, in essence, doing a lot of what we wanted, making it easier. You hit the ground running, as it were. Like, some of the things have already been done, you just continue. And it really made
so,
sense.
So, you used Java for how long?
For 2 years. Is it one or two? Yeah, I think 1.5 or two. And before that, while learning Java at the same time. Oh, my goodness. All that time.
Interesting.
Wasted. Not wasted. Not wasted. Anyways. So when we moved to Kotlin, I personally was so excited because Kotlin was doing things that I really liked. First of all, like, just declaring a lot of stuff went down. Boilerplate code decreased. Okay. But we were still at the point where our logic and UI is separated, you know. And it is really troublesome for someone learning. In the company where I work right now, one of the things I'm tasked with is getting sure our interns, junior developers, are up to speed and are okay with the Android framework. So this is what you'd use a lot of time sitting with them, knowing what they know, knowing what they don't know, so that you can also help them. And one of the most actually key things that makes them quit along the way is XML. As Herman said, he only knows XML because banks were using it as responses and requests. But
yeah. Actually, it is true.
Yeah.
I think most banks still are using the SOAP instead of the REST structure for data in the backend. So I think from the backend, what I understand is the SOAP and the XML.
Okay. Awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So us as Android developers, we are using XML for UI, user interface with XML. You know, at that time, but Steve said this thing, at that time, people in web are literally enjoying themselves, putting Tailwind on their views so that they can style them declaratively using HTML. I'm like, whoa, what is happening?
Yeah.
One thing that made me really consider why we are using XML is because I really loved, I got a project to do web development, like the front end bit, and I went straight to Nuxt. Vue and then Nuxt. I went straight to Nuxt. It had such a beautiful documentation, and how you implement the UI was phenomenal. Oh my god, I could not believe people were having it that easy in this world. Declaring components with data inside them, just calling those components like a madman on this other side, making one store and just getting data from one store. Who are you, these guys? Yep. Oh my goodness.
Yep.
I come back to Android and I am shocked. Not even shocked, I'm just depressed. Why? We are declaring an XML layout at one part, and then after that, you have to come and declare your data another part, and then come and merge them together. You see?
Yeah.
And for people starting out, that is really hard. Do you, like, you should know how hard it is to just create a list that scrolls in Android using XML. You will have to create the XML layout, the layout container for the list, create the items, the layout for the specific items. After creating those specific items, create a recycler view adapter for that recycler view. Create a view holder that should inflate the views independently. Make sure the view holder knows the difference between each and every view so that it does not render just one view. After that, take that adapter, call it inside a fragment or an activity, and then pass data to the adapter so that it can inflate the... You get what I'm where I'm going with this. You get. It is so disjointed and such hard work that some people actually give up along the way, you know.
On a light note, Herman and I have a common friend, a dude called Solomon Shihundu. So in 2019, when I mentioned I wrote Java, I was doing that with him, and he at that point he had been doing that for a while. I think he stopped writing Java somewhere along the way, and but I think he never fully recovered till now. And so, yeah, I understand where the mental frustrations come from.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway,
it is interesting. It is interesting. So I was reading up on XML. One, because I thought the way things are done on mobile and the web are pretty much the same when dealing with templating. And so I thought the way we use HTML is the same way you use XML. And so in my head, I was thinking, oh, that XML must be declarative. You just tell it something, then it knows what to do. But then it doesn't.
Ha!
Because you see, in comparison, a scroll view on the web is just add stuff. For as long as you add stuff and they don't fit on the screen, it is going to scroll. Don't worry about it. It is just going to scroll.
Oh, my goodness.
The easy work.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Anyway, so we are discussing XML and how it fits in, basically the transition into the frustrations with XML into Kotlin.
Yeah. So one thing also, like, so we're at the part where we are declaring recycler views and giving those recycler view IDs. Now, here's a part where it becomes a problem now. That recycler view, you have to give it an ID, or any view inside the XML layout, you have to give it an ID so that you can reference that ID inside your logic, okay? Now, maybe you have two objects or two layouts that have the same ID. Let's say username. There's a username text view and there's a username text view in another part. So you, the bright person you are, said, I do not want to make it very complex. Let me make it very easy. I write text username. I go to the other part. I say, I don't want to make it complex. Let me make it easy for me. Text username. When you go back and start referencing stuff, it gives you an error. Why? One, maybe you're not referencing the right text view, or it has already been declared, or maybe you're referencing an ID that is not there, or you're just doing stuff that is not there. You see the problem with them two becoming so disjointed, because you don't know if what you're really calling is there. So it is not type safe. Yeah. You might be having, let's say an example of an app like Twitter or Telegram. It has so many UIs components. If you, by any chance, remove one and try and call it again, maybe because it's a very big app, you won't have the time to now really get to the nitty-gritties and search for the specific ID that you removed. And your app will crash. And this was bringing a lot of frustration to developers. A lot of frustration. So we moved from that. And the Google team, thought, okay, you know what? Let's try and make this easier for developers. So instead of trying to reference a specific ID, what you're going to do is you're going to add a plugin called view binding or data binding. If you create a layout in XML, it will create a class. And in that class, if you have created any view component inside it, it will, you can reference them like variables inside that class. So that is awesome. Okay. That is really nice. That is one of the most fundamental thing that has helped developers to stay in Android. But it's still not, let's say, really customizable, you know. The problem is still, you have to go and declare your UI somewhere and then come and attach it to some logic. It is still disjointed. At the end of the day, if you want to create something dynamic, actually, the phrase dynamic in Android is one of the most difficult things to do. It's not as easy as it is in web, okay? Because it's disjointed. So what, as developers, what do you do? XML is not going to give you the same dynamism that you want as a UI developer. At no point will it ever give you. The data binding is like you take data and pass it inside the XML directly. Now the same way how you guys do in HTML. Data binding is like, you see how you guys do it in HTML? Like just pass data inside the HTML component tag, and then it will just render as it goes and as it comes, like that. I think that's the closest thing. Data binding was the closest thing we had to that. And let me tell you, Steve, it was the errors you would get. You understand, it's XML is there, and your logic is here. You have to link them together. You have to pass data to this data by this layout. And sometimes you have changed something, or the class has changed, and the XML layout does not know the class has changed. So there is a lot of errors. You don't know even where the error is. There had to be a change. At some point, there had to be a change in how we declare UIs. There just had to be a change. In iOS, they moved from, was it UIKit? They were doing UIKit. I was not there, thank God. They moved to Swift UI. And Swift UI is pretty declarative. Very declarative. Very expressive. It was, actually, it is a breath of fresh air in UI development. Swift UI is. So I think the team sat and thought, you know what? We need to make something similar. And that is where Jetpack Compose came in. They released it and said, okay, here is Compose, developers, try it and tell us what you guys think. And I think from the team that tried it.
A question from me. So from the XML to Jetpack, what changed? Is it the structure which they are passing the data, like they're not using now XML and using something else, or is Jetpack Compose itself like an improved XML?
It is not an improved XML. It is far from XML at all, but wait, they're interoperable, so you can still use Jetpack Compose and XML. It's like Jetpack Compose is just plain Kotlin, but used to render views with Kotlin. Like, instead of using XML, your UI is just common Kotlin code using composables, one after the other, and you can just nest a composer. You see how Steve was saying in Flutter, you can just nest something inside. It's just a nested graph going down.
Yeah,
that's the same thing. Compose
in Flutter, I think they are called widgets.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Compose, they're called composables.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
So for those who might not understand it, like Kotlin is used mainly for Android. Like it's not like a Flutter or something.
I feel an itch. You saying that sentence?
Cross platform.
my 2 cents of Kotlin. The entire idea of Kotlin is to sort of try and become a sort of JavaScript, like a master of all. So you can do Kotlin for server side, you can do Kotlin for native, you can actually do Kotlin for JavaScript. You can write Kotlin that is sort of compiled into JavaScript. So Kotlin can also work on the web, and it can also work for data science. So Kotlin is pretty intense. And I understand Kotlin multi-platform. Are those KMMs?
Yes.
Yeah, Kotlin multi-platform is, I think it is in beta. And the entire idea is it will allow a hybrid development. So you can build for iOS, Android, and the web in one code base.
Like a cross-platform.
Yeah, cross-platform.
Like a React Native. Or something.
Yeah.
So you see how you see what I'm saying? like Steve Kubica said, Kotlin is, I think, the first podcast episode for Kotlin Kenya is changing the Kotlin narrative, and the speakers will be talking about changing Kotlin, how Kotlin is known from, oh, Kotlin is known for this, to Kotlin is known, oh, this is what Kotlin is known for, you see. And I think that would be also an interesting thing to listen to. But as Steve said, I wouldn't say it's trying to be JavaScript. I wouldn't say it's trying to be JavaScript. Okay. And I wouldn't say it's not trying to be JavaScript. Like, the initial thing why Kotlin was made was to replace Java, right? And we know Java is used nearly anywhere. There's Swing for UI. There's, I think, Spring Boot for backend. It was being used on Android and so many places. And what Kotlin tried to do was, like, if you are using Java in a particular part, what we want you to do is just plug in Kotlin and you can use it in Kotlin. And they did a very nice job, very nice work. Kudos to the team. Awesome job. But I think at a particular point in time, they realized, you know what? We can do even more. You know, we can go beyond just what we thought about replacing Java, but replacing everywhere Java is. And one of the most beautiful things they have made till date is that Kotlin multi-platform, because it's not necessarily cross-platform. You write the logic. The logic is the only thing you'll write once. But UI, you will have to rely on the native UI framework. So it's like in Android, you'll have to rely on...
Wait.
Yeah.
Damn.
On Compose.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's cool.
You see, I like how Kotlin, the JetBrains team, went about it. First, they created a very awesome language. No offense to JavaScript. Awesome language. And it is such a... if you go to their website, they will tell you the Kotlin language is for developers to be happy. Like, that was one focus. Developer happiness.
This is JetBrains.
Yeah, this is JetBrains.
JetBrains are the developers for Kotlin. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So one thing they focused on was making developers happy. And I, as a Kotlin developer, I am extremely happy. I'm not just happy. I'm extremely happy. But they went even above and beyond, you know, like making sure they are developing something that developers will use. And that is one of the examples, as Steve has said, is Kotlin multi-platform, in that you write the logic. So if you are abstracting everything, we put UI aside and all this other logic, we put it together. Okay. And for the UI, now you have already reduced time to duplicate your logic. So there's no need for you to duplicate your logic. You've already declared it once. Now, just use your native front-end framework to tap into this specific UI logic that you have created. And it works. It works wonders. It just doesn't work. It works wonders. because the way Swift UI implements UIs and how Android did was actually very different. And there are libraries that in Swift, how you call them in Swift UI and in Android is, it's just different. But you see, you have already reduced time that you would have used to like duplicate the same API endpoints, the same data and stuff like that.
Okay. Bringing you back from the logic to UIs and declarative UIs. So you mentioned you wrote a bit of Next, that is Vue, essentially.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, I mean, you must have gotten like some sort of overview of the way things are done on the web in terms of state management, theming, and also just the way things are dynamic in the way that
yeah.
you, once state changes, then something mm-hmm. will change somewhere. So how is that in comparison with what is happening with Kotlin and, yeah, Kotlin UIs?
And Jetpack Compose. Okay.
Jetpack Compose.
One thing the Kotlin team I think focused on was state. First of all, even before Jetpack Compose, we were using live data, and after live data, we started using state flow, and it is just a state holder to show you if the state changes. It just it emits and the new state, the updated state. That was the first thing, right?
And in that case, rebuilds the UI.
Yes, rebuilds the UI. But remember, the UI was still in XML. So even if you're trying to rebuild, you might rebuild unnecessary. Let me give you a very simple scenario illustration. Suppose you want to create a server-driven UI, because right now our team is working on server. We have been working on server-driven UI. In XML, what I would do is I would create a recycler view, put that recycler view inside there, ensure that recycler view is dynamic in that it does not have one UI component that it renders, but a number that I've created somewhere else. Now, if the state changes from the server and it recompose, it updates the layout of XML layout, it will have to remove some things and put other things, right?
Yeah.
But achieving this, in all honesty, it is achievable, but achieving such a feat to achieve something like that. It's not as simple as it sounds. The code becomes very difficult to maintain, to read, to change. It just becomes a whole can of worms that you don't want to work with. Here comes Compose. And what Compose does is, it tells you, okay, just create your composables the way you want, all right? After creating them, based on the state, based on the data you are providing, we will render what you want to render. That's it. We won't focus on anything else. We will just focus on, based on the data that you are providing, my guy, that is what we will render. Implementing it in Compose was so easy. Honestly, it was so easy and simple. I could not believe that we were trying to achieve it in XML.
Yeah, I like how these things are borrowing from each other. So because that is exactly the same way React would behave. You just tell it, you just give it data, and then it is just going to update things. It almost feels like magic.
It is stateful.
Yeah.
In that case, yeah.
So it's like, as a developer, you focus on just your data, okay? Focus on how you want that data to look. And here's the thing. You can focus on how you want the data to look, not only on an Android phone, on a tablet, on a 6-inch device, on a 5-inch device, and then just render it. You know, if the device is long enough, render this. If the device is not long enough, render this. Very simple and beautiful.
Okay. I am curious with Is that process the one that is called recomposition?
Yes. Yes, it is.
I am curious with whether you could speak about exactly what happens sort of behind the scenes and in terms of the operations that go on in order to just update the views.
Okay, so I would not say I'm an expert at that and I know it fully, but think of it in this way. You have a UI tree, right? Every composable is just composed from a parent UI tree. Frank would really kill me for saying parent UI tree anyways. But they have a parent tree. So after that, what we do is it takes the state and watches it, right? If the state has been updated and anything changes along the way, it will just recompose what is changed, right? It will not start recomposing everything, because that's what sometimes you'd think with nested UI frameworks, that okay, the top has been recomposed, recompose everything. No, it will just take what has changed and recompose exactly that. But you also have to be very careful in how recomposition works. Recomposition can be your greatest friend, but also your greatest enemy. Hence, because maybe you are watching something that you're not supposed to, you're listening to something you're not supposed to, and when it starts recomposing from top, it starts recomposing everything, because it's like a drop-down chain. Instead of just giving the component exactly what it needs, let it recompose just what it needs instead of the whole tree.
Ah, so I'm curious, how is that achieved? Or is that does it work like the way React works, Kibuika, with the, is it the virtual DOM or something?
Yeah.
Like they're having what is running and then mirroring what is happening. I don't know if I'm clear on that. So that when a change occurs, the only the part that has changed will re-render.
Yeah. In React, it is almost referred with a similar name. In React, it is called reconciliation. So React introduced this concept of a virtual DOM, because a virtual DOM is a DOM is basically a document object model, which is basically a tree. It is a tree, just as you are referring to it. And so React, what it does, it introduces another virtual DOM, which is basically another tree that is a representation of your application. And so when you change something or state changes, it notes that particular data that has changed, compares it to the other real DOM, and then it only changes that part, that component that changed, instead of tearing down the entire tree and rebuilding it. So yeah, it feels similar. I don't want to say it's similar because I don't know what exactly is the rendering design in mobile applications. They are just those the trees, what are they called? Because I don't want to call them the trees of widgets.
The trees of composables.
The trees of...
Okay. The composable tree.
Not exactly, but okay. I mean, this is very interesting. One, because coming from a web background, I'm trying to compare everything that you are talking about to what we do on the web. And so... yeah, I see a lot of things that are crossing over. And yeah, I mean, it has to be fascinating. So I have a question. So for someone trying to learn mobile development right now, would you recommend starting with Java and XML so that they can appreciate Kotlin? Or would you stick with a Kotlin makes developers happier, and you want to help them be happy, and you tell them, advise them to do Kotlin?
It has reached the part of real truths the elephant in the room. Why would someone in their right mind start using Java? I do not know. If I've offended anyone, sorry, but why would you start learning Android in Java? Please wake up. Kotlin is the primary language for Android right now. But I would suggest if you are learning Android, like this is what I would I say even to interns when they're coming, like if you want to learn Android development to be employed in and work with a team, you would notice that most of their applications have XML. So it's a good thing to really know XML and then just add Jetpack Compose, because it will enable you to work in that team and also make changes if anything is needed. If you jump straight to Compose, I am 100% sure not very few apps, not majority, have embraced full Compose. So it will be a very good bonus for you to learn XML and then just learn Compose, and that will help you. But do not start with Java.
Is it by choice that most companies have not embraced like a Compose fully? Is it by choice or maybe the cost of refactoring and stuff?
True. Yeah, that is also a factor. But what I would say is it depends on teams. It depends very largely on teams. There are teams who embraced Compose immediately. I know teams who embraced Compose even before it was stable and they're already shipping their products in Compose. There are others who are a little skeptical and were like, okay, there's a new child in town, but let's just wait for it. There's also the team that requires things in Compose that are not there. You see, let's just say the truth. There are things that are in XML that are not in Compose. That's a problem.
Okay.
If you want to go to Compose fully, you'd want every single component to be available, but they're not there. So it depends with the actual team.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, this has been a very fruitful discussion. We've really talked about a lot of things. I feel like Kotlin itself deserves an entire episode of just us looking at Kotlin and dissecting
things
with Kotlin. I'm very much interested in the whole Kotlin JS integration and Kotlin JS and how they work together, and also Kotlin on the server side. And so, yeah. So I feel we've come to the end of this episode, unless there's something I'm missing or you feel you'd want to mention.
Yep. So, Mambo.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bana. Yep.
Thank you very much, Harman. I appreciate it.
For the passion. I've seen a lot of passion.
I am passionate about Kotlin to some extent.
Okay. So at the end of each episode, we do this thing where we each mention our current interest, just very quickly, something that you're currently interested in, whether it is a movie, a film,
or even a community.
Or something you're experimenting with. Guest first.
Guest first. you should set an example so that I know.
Okay, let me set an example. So right now I'm very much into chess. I am not a really good chess player, but I am good. So yeah, I'm really into chess. And then just slightly, I recently started watching slap fights, and they are weirdly interesting, just watching people slap.
Oh, yeah. I saw your tweet. I laughed, by the way.
Yeah. Just watching people slap each other is weirdly interesting. So, yeah. Harman?
Yep. So interesting. Thank you, Kibweka. So on my side, I would say like seeing like myself in communities, tech communities. I've really been sluggish on that side, but I think that's the area that I'm working more.
Nice.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, so the Go community.
Yes, oh, yes, yes.
Oh, it's Go.
Yeah, it's Go. Of course it's Go.
Not Kotlin.
I thought it was Kotlin.
Yeah.
Welcome to Kotlin Kenya.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm also looking I've not yet found, but for an open source project, like contributing more and more. Something okay. For, yep.
Nice.
So if you have some and you need a Go developer, yeah.
You're the person to come to.
Yes.
Nice.
What have I been? Okay, I would say I've watched Interstellar more than 10 times, but I've still not gotten to one episode of Game of Thrones. I'm really interested in Interstellar. It is a very good movie. Awesome. I've been also very interested in how do I put it? Making communities work for people.
Uh-huh.
That is also okay. As an organizer for Under2FFR in Kotlin, Kenya, we have been trying to do our best to make sure the community works for the people we are actually targeting, just like Harman, and make sure the engagement is what they need and what they want. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes, apart from those two, awesome. I think it's UIs. I am just learning to do UIs in every possible platform known to man. Web, Android, iOS, and desktop.
TVs, man. Anyway, again, thank you very much. So where can the people find you?
On Twitter, Mambo Brian, no caps. On GitHub, I am Mambo Brian, at Mambo Brian, M caps, B caps, and on LinkedIn, Mambo Brian. That's where awesome. You can find me. But you'll find me mostly on Twitter. I'll be talking to, I'm normally talking to guys on Twitter.
Yeah, we'll add your links in the show notes. And yeah, thank you for joining us for this episode. I hope you enjoyed everything. And yeah, you can reach out to us with anything we do not have a handle. You can just email us at concurrencypod@gmail.com. And thank you so much for joining us, and see you in the next one.
Thank you.
Bye.
Cheers.